Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Get a gun.
Hello, welcome to Slamfire Radio. This is episode 549 for March 27th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
And I'm Kyle.
And Kelly's got the plague, I believe is what she said. Turbo plague. And Mo is...
I think he's out surfing.
Surfing, yeah. Montreal's an island. It's surrounded by water. I'd assume you can surf there.
Well, yeah, and weather's turning, so he's beach bumming and surfing.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I think he's all about, is that surfing life, catching hang 10 and smoking a doobie of marijuana and just relaxing, right?
Yeah, that's Mo. Yeah, that sounds exactly like Mo. Yep.
Kyle, why don't you start us off with what you did in Guns this week?
Sure. So Saturday, I went to Roswell and shot their level one USPSA match. Crystal came and shot as well. And yeah, I got the dot swapped out on her pistol on Friday and got it sighted in. And so far, she seems to like it. So I think I may have lost my EOTech dot.
Oh. So, that means you get to buy another one, though.
Yeah. Another thing to put to the list to buy. Yep. overall, not bad day. I think I ended up with a couple mics through the day, but yeah, I ended up winning my division, but there's four people in there. And they did two classifiers. Didn't do great on either one, but didn't like totally bomb either. But yeah.
Did you go up in classification?
No. In fact, okay, so apparently they fixed our club stuff, and I'd go on USPSA, look at our club stuff, and yeah, like everything except for like the all classifier match that we did last year is showing up there. Go to my classification? Nope, not showing up there.
Still holding the D.
Still holding the D, and yeah, they still don't like me. So
You gotta ask someone nicely.
I thought I did ask nicely, but I just renewed my membership too, so they should like me. Like, Tony says, so they're just anti-Canadian, like I predicted. That could be it. That could very well be it.
I didn't think about that. Yeah,
trying to hold us Canadians down.
Can't be a good shooter if you're Canadian.
Well, no.
That's because of D.
You can't
ignore all the data. That's lies. Those are all lies.
Yeah. Fake news. But yeah, overall, it was a fun match. They did six stages, including the two classifiers. And yeah, it was a good day. I also, last week, I don't know, it was Thursday or whatever, I was talking with Buddy Craig. And we were getting stuff squared away for Texas coming up in a few weeks and whatnot. And we started looking at my dope data. And in there, just from previous stuff, I had my height over bore at like 2 inches. Well, measured the height over bore on my rifle with this optic I'm using right now. And it was actually like 3 inches. And so yeah, it was a very elementary mistake, because I looked at the data on my dope sheet in Straylock, and with the 2-inch height over bore, my zero was 50 yard zero, it was 50 to or 50 and 160, 170 yard zero. As soon as I put in the 3-inch height over bore instead of the 2-inch, it went to a 50, 225 yard zero. And then looking at the data further, so right there, you know, again,
that mistake
almost 60 yards on your second zero.
Yeah, which that one's not so bad, but you were shooting much further than 200 on that course of fire.
Yeah. Yeah, so I went back through the data and compared, and with the old data, it was telling me for like the 480 and 612 yard shots that I needed to hold basically 5 mil and 7 mil respectively. With the new data, it was a 2 mil difference. It was telling me 3 and 5 mil for those holds. So yeah, I was just sailing rounds way over top of the target.
Oh my goodness. 2 or 3 mils difference. That's insane.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a rather elementary mistake that I don't know why, but yeah, I didn't even think that, well, for one, I didn't think that to be a 3-inch height over bore with this setup, but it is, and it makes that big of a difference.
I was just measuring mine in the background there, and I've got 3 and 2 3/4 inch for my height over bore on my AR-ish rifles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that 2-inch would be incredibly low, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah. I thought I had measured that before with my old setup, but maybe I didn't.
Is it a standard riser?
It's a Warn 1.9 riser, so I think it's actually a fairly tall riser looking at how it's set up there, but I didn't have to adjust my cheek piece, but maybe I'll be looking at that a little bit more, but, but yeah. So
I think standard's like 2 3/4 or 3 inches, so somewhere around there.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I screwed that up and, you know, now I have
maybe
accurate
dope. From the bore to the bottom of the scope.
Yeah, maybe. This is
or,
what
or
it
to
is,
the
right?
Rings, the bottom of the rings or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. That sounds about right. Yeah, so now I have accurate dope. So I'm still going to go up to the range, confirm everything. But now, come Texas, I should be able to go and use my dope and stray lock and be able to hit targets. So that'll be cool.
That'll be a good time.
Yeah. Saturday night, you and I, we sat down and did another match video breakdown. So did a little bit. Well, basically it was my March matches and then your first match of the year. And then we did a throwback to one of my first matches that was entertaining, we'll say.
Love it. Yeah. Love looking at that old stuff.
Yeah, it is fun. Sometimes it's cringeworthy, but it's fun. So I got segments broke out and uploaded to my YouTube channel now. So yeah, Adriel's got the full stream on his YouTube channel. Pretty sure you can still watch it on my Twitch channel. And then, yeah, I got broke out into different matches for my YouTube channel.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Get people looking
for
that match, right?
That, like, I mean, it's Lunatic Tactical on YouTube, but I mean, as we've discovered before, cause I haven't been uploading anything to it. It's actually difficult to find. But I noticed leading up to Superstition, there were a couple people that watched the breakdown of like last year's Superstition video. Hmm. So it must have been people looking to get prepped for the match or just interested in that. So yeah, that was cool to see. And Sunday there was a gun show going on here in town. So we went to that on Sunday afternoon and it was the usual thing. I'm actually, even down here, I'm starting to get more and more bummed out with the gun shows. They're just trade shows. Like, they're not even 50% guns. There's knives and arts and crafts and stuff. And overpriced AKs, like, way overpriced. Mm-hmm. I almost buy an AK-12, though. They were selling it for $450. Yeah. Yeah, the one company they had, they had an AK-12. It was $450. I almost did it, but I figured I didn't need to have another gun to be trying to get running here right now. So, but yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it was a good price, and it would have been a good basis to really figure out that platform and get that platform running, because I know just out the box, they don't run good unless you spend a few grand and get like a dissident or do a whole pile of work to them. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, there was really your usual stuff. Getting ready for 3-gun match here in Carlsbad on the weekend. So yeah, getting prepped up for that. I did change in prep for that. I changed the springs on my auto lifter. I had a couple spare springs here from another auto lifter that I put in there. So we'll see how that runs this weekend.
Brave. Very brave.
Well, no, I got to replace them, and this is just a little local match. So perfect time to put them in and make sure it runs.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than that, like I've actually been having conversations and whatnot, but finally getting started on my jersey for the year. It's a little bit delayed, but I was waiting to hear back from a couple companies, and unfortunately nothing happening with them this year, but because of previous issues with communication and whatnot with my old jersey maker, I decided to try someone new. So I reached out to a couple companies. One of them finally reached back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, going through design with them, because I kind of want to keep the same basic design that I have, just more or less change the logos. And even though all the issues, like timeline issues and communication issues I had with the previous company, this one is making me miss them. So I gave them a call and left a voicemail saying, hey, is there any chance you guys can get my jersey done up? Because we're going through the design, and like I told them, okay, I want this logo on the sleeve, and then these logos, and here's my stuff, like my skull and the lunatic logo.
Mm-hmm.
The first flag to me was when he sent back, for one, doesn't answer any of my questions about timeline, if they do hoodies or jackets, just straight to the design, which, okay, well, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there kind of thing. But then he sent back my skull saying, oh, it's super pixelated, it won't look good on this. So I had to touch that up to send back to them. Mm-hmm. And then I just got a design here this afternoon, and it's best I can get figure is they're printers. They're not designers. Because missed one of the company's logos, did not listen to when I said this logo on this sleeve, this logo on this sleeve. And I sent the same files before, and basically the guys who did my jersey before, for one, they knocked the design out of the park, and they touched, if the logo needed to be touching up, they touched it up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm having fun with that, and I don't know if I'm just being prissy or what, but yeah, like this experience with this company right now, I'm not overly thrilled with. Because
I think it would come down to like, do you need the design or not need the design? Sounds like you need the design. So if the guys who just print are cheaper, okay, why not? It's cheaper, but they don't do design. But if they're the same price and they don't do design and they're kind of crap on communications, then maybe they're not a good choice.
Yeah, well, I mean, like these are custom jerseys. So your base design is all custom, and then you send in the logos and whatnot. So if the company, I'm trying not to name names here right now. So, but if they're my company that I was dealing with for a while hadn't had the timeline issues and everything, because like, yeah, their design, like they knocked it out of the park. I wanted to keep that design. Mm-hmm. But I don't have like the PNG file for that. All I have is a JPEG from basically a proof that they sent me. And so, yeah, I know they're not going to get it exact, but just looking at it is like, you guys aren't even trying. You're just slapping stuff together here. So,
yeah,
that's unfortunate, but, you know, one way or another, I'll have to just suck it up and, know, Mike, I might, if you want to send that to the show, I might be interested. We'll see how it goes over the next couple days. But yeah, if you can send that to the show, that'd be great. Thanks, Mike. But yeah, I'm going to try calling my original guys tomorrow and see what they say, if I can get a hold of them. But yeah, enough of my griping about jerseys. That's basically it. So Adriel, what did you get up to this week?
Did a PAL course. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Saturday I did a PAL course at Sherwood Park. I went really well. This class was really interesting. They're sharp, and they did really well on the practical. Like we spent quite a bit of time with the guns during practice gun handling, and they knocked the practical out of the park. It was really good. They're all still nervous, as you are when you do that kind of thing, but so good, so easy to mark too, because they just did everything perfect. So I was like, well, that's easy, right?
Nice.
Yeah, so that went well. I thought
that's a reflection of the instructor, right?
I think it's purely the instructor. Yeah, they get good grades because of me. Yeah, and not because I bark easy, but because they listen really well, and our teaching is so top notch.
Yeah.
I ordered some M855. Now you can't use this in 3-gun because it's a lot of ranges don't like you to use.
It's a little spicy.
Steel. A little bit spicy. Yeah. But the price was too spicy, and I couldn't refuse. Soli Outdoors was out of these, and I was like, oh man, I was kind of hemming and hawing over that A55, and then I didn't do it like a dumbass, and now I'm gonna have to spend like $750 on some other stuff, and I'm not gonna have this pretty inexpensive ammo. And then I looked, and I was like, they got some more. They got like 72 cases of this stuff more at $679, free shipping. For nice. 855. So I
62 grain. Wow, nice.
62 grain spicy stuff. 3100 FPS from a 20-inch barrel, 2920 from a 16-inch barrel is still pretty spicy for a 62 grain bullet.
That's interesting, because I'm getting 2900 from just my PMC bronze, not the X-TAC.
Like 55 grain, and this
the 55 grain, yeah. So yeah, that actually, mm-hmm. That is a spicy 62 grainer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think their X-TAC is faster than their bronze too. But anywho, ordered 1,000 of that. I think I fixed my WSMCR. I haven't had it out to the range. I probably won't have it out to the range. Maybe until my next match. So I guess we'll find out then. But I put the new gas piston in there, and I think that was it. The gas piston was bent. It didn't want to go back into battery. I think this is a pretty big smoking gun in terms of now what'll be it pissed me off is if that piston fails like within 100 rounds or something like that.
Yeah. Did you happen to check out your bushing? Make sure your bushing still survived?
It looked fine. Yeah. Bushing looked fine. I did the other match footage stream with you the other night there. And then I wanted to show my 1911 just for Tony here. Okay. Oh yeah. Let me zoom in. Okay. By the way, this red dot, the Holosun 407, I haven't changed the battery in it yet. I got this thing in 2021 and it's still on, still nice and bright. It's got like a shake awake. So in terms of battery life, fantastic. And I don't shoot it a lot. Got
that solar panel on top there too?
That's not to charge a battery. That's just if your battery's dead, that'll put a dot out for you.
Oh, okay.
The battery's not rechargeable in this thing. So that solar panel is just if your battery dies, you can use it. Mm. Yeah. And I think it also may detect light to change how bright it is. If I could have a flashlight here, maybe I could test that out. It's been so long since I reviewed this thing that I don't remember which one it was. Okay, yeah. No, I don't see it changing brightness. Nope, it doesn't seem to care about that. So that just must be the backup. Anyways, Tony was having an issue with pressing on here and getting it to disassemble itself. And yeah, mine does that too. I run into it because my finger doesn't like rest right there. But if I'm pressing on that as I'm pulling the slide back and the safety's off, yeah, I get the same thing. It'll want to disassemble itself. And now because my freaking plunger is so tight on this thing, I need to use a pick to get it back in there. okay, yeah, that's in there. Oh, you bastard. This is when you need like a soft-faced hammer, when you just want to get in there and do some damage. Anyways, yeah, this is, oh, there we go. Kind of annoying on this one because that plunger is just a little bit too far for the slide stop. But I never run across this. It never happens for me. If my finger's on the trigger, it's not pushing up here. And as I'm reloading, I'm generally not putting my finger on that button there. So, yeah. God, it's getting so good. I should shoot this thing more often. I put the prestigious stocks grip on there. They had sent some to us. That's the one that I opened.
Nice.
A little bit of a blonde kind of a look on it. But I wonder what the trigger pull is on this pistol. This is the stock Norinco pistol, worked over by Trevor and Captain Andy, some guy in a boat. 3 pounds, 6 ounces, 3.5 pounds. It's a pretty nice trigger. It also does not move on this thing.
Oh yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice trigger. The only thing I don't like about it is putting mags in because it doesn't have a rectangular, like a more wide mag because it's a single stack. So you really got to get them straight.
That's just a 1911 thing.
Yeah, even with the, because I did put a magwell on this thing. It's got like a wider, one of those magwells that you can put on there, which was pretty inexpensive when I got it. I think it was like $60 or something like that. Back when the dollar was at parity and I was buying all sorts of stuff off of Brown Ales. The good old days.
Yeah.
Those days are gone. Yeah. But maybe I should shoot that thing sometime. Why don't we get on to the upcoming events? This weekend is the Calgary Easter Gun Show. It's that pretty big gun show in Calgary. That's coming up. The ORA is going to be doing some long range fundamentals courses on May 11th and 12th and July 6th and 7th. Sign up on Practice Score. Over on to the news. Ottawa has already spent $42 million on a Liberal gun buyback that still doesn't exist.
That's awesome.
Not that I'm that sad about that, but it is still, I guess, my money that they're spending there doing nothing.
Yeah.
only a Liberal government can spend so much money doing nothing.
Yeah, literally doing nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Just sitting idle, it costs money.
Yeah.
$42 million. Launch in 2020, years behind schedule, and still years behind schedule. Mm-hmm. In response to an order paper questioned by Don Plett, Public Safety Canada revealed that $41.9 million had been spent so far on the government's firearms buyback program, and that 60 department employees are working on the project. How do I get into this project?
No doubt.
This is going to be like the pine ridingest of pine riders sitting doing nothing and collecting a paycheck. Oh, man, this has got to be. You know how, what is it? Was that Men in Black where they were talking about? No, that was Independence Day, where he's talking about, wow, you don't think that they actually spend $40,000 on a hammer. This is the government like putting money into their black ops fund, right?
Yeah.
They're not actually putting $42 million towards 60 department employees doing nothing. This is probably like funding some insurrection in Nicaragua or some shit.
Yeah.
Some deep, dark stuff that the government's doing with that $42 million. We can't be spending it on this. Anywho. Oh. Yeah, they gave IBM a $2 million contract. And and they still say the RCMP is managing a team of 15 full-time employees devoted to it.
Oh.
Public Service Canada has 6 FTEs on it. and they're doing nothing.
Wow.
Impressive.
I want to see the expense accounts on those jobs.
I want to see their timesheets.
Well, there's that. Well, we already know they're clocking in and doing nothing. We already know that, but what else? Like
side jobs. I bet they got side jobs.
Yeah.
They're
the ones surfing at the beach.
They're the ones commenting on Reddit and Facebook and that kind of thing all day. Let's get into new gun stuff. New gun stuff is brought to you by Bullseye North. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR with a wide selection of guns and top training gear for any shooter. Free shipping over $250. Some exclusions apply. I think you put this in here. They have the Secure Wall heavy duty panel.
Yeah.
Ooh, and it's on sale.
Yep.
Oh, what else do they got? What other kind
they
of
got a whole a whole bunch of secure stuff like the hooks and safe parts and accessories and
hangers. That's a fairly reasonable priced. $11 for two, $764 for one. That's a double universal hook. Oh, well, if you're in the area, you should probably go check this out because this pricing looks fairly decent. And if you want to do like a gun wall like that, this would be a way to do it on the cheap. Well, they got an LED tape light, magnetic barrel rest. I got some of those I like. Handgun muzzle rack. Those are nice as well. That's nice. Nice way to store handguns like in a compact area. Hydrometer gauge. Yep. You got to have those. Otherwise, your stuff starts rusting. You're like, why is this stuff all rusting? Especially as we enter into spring right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, did you post the Bullseye North thing to Facebook?
No.
No? It says can't post comments to some destinations.
I didn't even do the Bullseye comment because it did that to us before, so I stopped posting that.
Huh, weird. It still shows people following us on Facebook, so I'll assume that's just doing weird stuff. Oh, let's get on to some other stuff. Solely Outdoors has the Kel-Tec Sub 2000 Gen 3s. This is the one that twists and turns.
Yep.
And it is, I need the whole window. That thing right there. $750 and it twists. It twists and turns.
Yep.
It's kind of neat. Not that much more than the Gen 2 either.
No.
Canada's Gun Store has the reloading Hornady 12-piece single-stage reloading set for $550. Nice single stage. Why don't they show the press here?
I don't know. Just the box. And
have all the other stuff out. Maybe because there's no way to like... No, you put on a stand or something like that, right?
Yeah, you would think.
This hand primer for Hornady, I hate it. It's the worst one. This is the worst primer... Worst hand primer you can get. Calgary Shooting Center has lots of Volquartz and stuff in stock. So if you're looking for a VT2 barrel, carbon fiber barrel, or any of the GoFast parts for the Ruger 10/22, Ruger Mark 3/4/5, all that kind of stuff, they got some of that. Ooh, recoil springs too. Volquartzen, what's $350? Volquartzen TGS Summit Trigger Group $360, and that's for a 10/22 trigger group that has a 1.75-pound trigger pull.
Nice,
very nice. Now we get off of Kyle's reasonable recommendations for new gun stuff and Adriel's insanity. This is the ACDES AK-12 UBS 12-gauge under barrel shotgun. Because you can take the stock off and mount it. And see, it's got a big pick rail on the top.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It is the budget under barrel shotgun. Not really budget, $900.
Yeah.
But it's ready to go.
Yeah.
Then we got some suggestions from Tony here. Score 12 gauge high velocity shotgun shells, and I think these are slugs. Yes, they are. $20 for a box of 25 high speed 1 ounce slugs. And when I say high speed, 1550 FPS, these are shoulder busters. I have a whole bunch of these.
Yeah,
they do the job. They do the job. I shot a coyote with them.
Nice. The coyote died.
Yeah. So if you're in a hunting in a shotgun only area, this isn't a bad idea. Get a big box of these things. You got enough that you could practice, see where it hits for your shotgun, and not feel bad about it. Like, not because this is less than $1 a slug.
Yeah, that's not 20 bad. Bucks,
25 slugs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what some of the Score like low recoil stuff goes for, is right around that price. But this,
well,
is
I did like their match slugs.
I like this too. I run them. I still get jams every once in a while with slugs in my gun, but I don't really care. Just work around it. And then another thing that Tony pointed out, SFRC has the Gen X Cam Pro small pistol primers for $79 per thousand. That is a good price. I don't know what shipping is going to be. Shipping would probably kill me to buy something like this, right?
Oh, probably.
Well, they only have two in stock. Only two left. Buy in bulk and save. Okay, but what's my shipping going to be? Check out. My screen for OPSEC.
Yeah.
Shipping. Canada, Alberta, Edmonton. Estimated shipping. Only $29. That's not bad. But it kind of erases the price differential on those. But if you're local to SFRC, go get some of those. Shipping is free over $250 at SFRC. Is it now? But then I have to buy a bunch of other stuff. I have to buy two of these things and some more stuff.
Yeah.
I'm already spending too much these days. All right, why don't we get into the main topic?
Sure.
And for the main topic, I thought it would be interesting to talk about what they don't teach you in the PAL course. I just taught one on Saturday, and the PAL course is a basic course for anyone to do. It covers basic safe handling of firearms, basic laws, like how to stay on side of the laws for transportation, display, and storage, and... that's about it. How to like read the cartridge numbers off the back of the cartridge, how to match it up with the firearm that you're going to shoot it in, how to use some of the different actions. There's still some gaps there because it's only one day. So yeah. I thought it might be interesting to talk about what else you'd need to do like pretty quick after getting that firearms license done, like what other courses you... So Kyle, how long has it been for you? It's been 20 years since I did my PAL course.
It's been a while. I want to say since I got my PAL, 09 when I got my PAL. So 15 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Been a while. Do you remember any of the things that kind of struck you after you got your PAL? What was your first rifle? Do you remember?
A lot from my uncle. So,
all right.
I grew up hunting. Stuff. So like in that group. My first rifle was a Seiko 25-06, a couple shotguns, like a 870, an old Stevens shotgun. Can't remember. Oh, there was like a couple 22s, like one cut down that gauge shoots, little single shot Winchester. So like they're pretty much all guns I was already somewhat familiar with.
Inherited. I like it. Yep. I didn't get any inherited guns.
Well, no, I bought them right off away. Of him.
Oh, you bought them. Good price, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Family price. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I bought an SKS. That was my first gun.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I bought an SKS for $175, and then I bought 1,000 rounds, and me and my uncle went and shot like a pile with them, just like shooting them at everything. No hearing protection, just blasting away, losing our hearing. but there was a number of things that I didn't learn as part of that. Trying to think of where to start here. How to shoot. How to shoot well. I think that's something that eluded me for not only 1 year, but like many years afterwards. Yeah, I could shoot a deer with a scope and that kind of thing, but the rest of it, I bought a handgun, an Orenco 45 for like $300. I shot it a bit. I didn't really like it because at 10 meters, I couldn't really hit things with it. I kept hitting low and all over the place. So they're just inaccurate guns, right?
Yeah. They don't teach you how to shoot. Like, okay, a lot of people can pick up a rifle, put sights on, and they'll get the shot close. But the actual fundamentals and the steps on how to take a shot, be it pistol or long gun, they don't teach you that.
So if someone just went through the PAL course and got their license, what would you recommend for them to learn how to shoot?
Actually, a maple seed, a fundamentals course.
I think the same. A maple seed would be amazing.
For pistol, I would say go find a local holster course or fundamentals course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shoot it a bit and then go find a course for it. That would be a good idea too, because pistol's hard. Mm-hmm. I went for years and years of owning handguns that I thought were just crap when it was me who was crap. I was part of that equation.
And then with
Slamfire, I did a couple of courses with like Matthew and Trevor, and that I learned a bunch. I did some carbine courses with Hungry, the M14 tactical teacher guy, and that I learned some stuff from. But yeah, it was doing that, and then three gun, like getting into competition shooting. Holy crap!
Yeah,
actually, I don't know anything, and I can see it in the score. I can see in the score that I am crap, and I can see exactly why I'm crap. I'm not very good at shooting. I'm not very fast. I'm kind of slow in my foot movement. Just everything to be improved.
Well, yeah, like the fundamental courses will get you standing there shooting, and then, if you're going to get in a competition or whatever, then that's like a whole other level.
Yeah, and I think that for some people, that's going to be a motivator to like rapidly increase their skills. For me, it was. For me, it was like, oh man, I suck. I need to get better, and I know how to do it. I need to copy what this person's doing. This person, looks like they're practicing their stage walkthrough. Oh, maybe I should do that. Maybe I shouldn't just like walk in here and just like hunt and peck around for my targets and whatnot. Oh, this person looks like they're bombing up their mags immediately after they shoot. I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna keep copying all these things that these faster shooters are doing. So I think that competition shooting for me was really good for learning how to shoot.
Yeah. Oh, same. That took my shooting whole new level and more confidence. Like you go out hunting or do something like that. Three gun has definitely helped with the confidence in that.
Well, because otherwise you'd never get the number of shots from the number of different positions. I think you'd probably get that from ORPS or PRS or something like that. Like those guys would probably be even more confident in their shots on deer, because if they can shoot off a stack of tires, they can shoot off of, the fence post that they're on when they're hunting. Right. And they'll know like, oh, I'm going to reverse kneel off this fence post, and that deer at 300 is toast because I've got this like, way of building up the stable position. I think like doing one of those, you fire so much more rounds that you become comfortable with knowing what performance you're capable of and what kind of deer you can shoot at. Because I think without that, when you're shooting at deer, you have no idea if you're going to hit it or not.
Yeah,
the scope's moving around a little bit, but maybe that's okay. Maybe it's moving all around the kill zone on the deer. Or maybe it's like on, off, on, off. And you're like, I just have to time it while it's in the middle and then squeeze it off and jerk the trigger. Yeah, I think getting the rounds out with competition is great for confidence, like you said there, on hunting and that kind of thing. I guess that's one other thing that they don't teach in the course. They don't really teach hunting, right?
No. Not really, no.
Hunter's Ed is good, though. Across
a fence line. Oh, yeah, Hunter's Ed's pretty good. I think Alberta's is getting better, although it's interesting. It's all online. Like they don't really hear too many actual courses going on. It's more or less
you can do them.
Yeah.
They're still doing the in-person courses. It's just the online ones are so convenient because you can do it over the course of like a couple of days. You don't have to just burn the 6 or 8 hours of material. You can, so because I just recently had my two kids go through, well, recently in the last couple of years here, I had my two kids go through the Hunter Zed, and I think the materials were great on it. I think that as a basic starter, it was fantastic.
Yeah. The BC Core course, which is their Hunter Zed, that is amazing. Like, I think it's better than Alberta's book and course. It is really, really good. Like my wife and sister, they went through the online Alberta one. And I don't know, I think like when I did my core in BC, is same thing with the hunting. Like I did my hunting back when I was 12. They don't even have record of it just because it was all paper at that time. But like BC, like you got the same thing as the PAL course. You have stuff there to look at, touch, feel, go off of, like for certain ID or stuff. So I think on certain things, and especially for certain people, that in person would probably be better, especially if you can get a good instructor that has good props and whatnot there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, one thing that you don't get out of either of them, what's common when you're hunting. Because like in the PAL course, they teach you like, okay, well, the requirement for transport is unloaded and that's it. If you need to stop at Timmy's or something like that, the car's got to be locked. It's got to be unloaded. And the vehicle's got to be locked. Gun has to be out of sight and it has to be unloaded. Right.
Yeah.
But like in hunting season, it's very normal for people to be driving around with their hunting rifle on the passenger seat and a mag sitting on the dash.
Yep.
And that's legal. That's totally legal. It's in transport.
It's in your immediate care and control.
I don't know if it needs to be though. You could have it like hanging out.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Like you're present. You're not.
Yeah. So like that part's normal, even though like in the chorus, you'd be like, oh, that doesn't seem right. If it's in there, if it's in the car or the trunk, it has to be in the trunk. Trunk has to be locked. Car has to be locked. Yeah. And the trunk's a practical place to put it because it's out of sight. Yeah. Not only just from the law, you got to think about like, how do I keep a crackhead from breaking my window and taking this thing? And like leaving it out in sight is a great way of having a gun stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, what about like, in the PAL course, they teach like crossing fences and that kind of thing with a buddy. And they teach unloading it completely and then crossing the fence and then passing it to your buddy. And then your buddy, you know, acts and proves it and then takes another gun and acts and proves that. And then you cross the fence and then he can't pass you the gun and you acts and prove that gun. And do you do that in your hunting parties, right?
Well, Pal? Of course. Absolutely. No, we don't.
No. Do you even unload them when you? I don't unload them when I pass them. They're muzzle up.
So when I'm just standard, this is. I know we've had many discussions over this. This is where we differ. When I'm walking around, I'm either decocked or there's nothing in the chamber. Period. So I gotta cycle the bolt to take a shot. Like I don't walk around with just the safety clicked on.
I do.
Yeah, I know you do, but
yeah, guns fully gassed up, ready to rock and roll because. I would say like maybe 20% or 30% of the deer that I've gotten have been like while I was walking to the blind I was supposed to be sitting at. And like, oh, there's a deer. And I pull on target and I really push for silent safeties. I want a safety that when I engage it, it doesn't make like a loud click or something like that. That would scare a deer off because I want to basically pull that thing on target and flick it on. And I wouldn't want to hunt with this gun because.
Yeah.
Savage 99, the safety on that thing, 100-year-old rifle, it's silent. You can't hear a thing. It just slowly comes off. I would like that one. That's more for a close one, right?
Yeah.
That's more etiquette. That's more like hunting etiquette. I guess you'd have to establish that with your hunting group. So if you're the new person on the crew, you do what everyone else is doing. If everyone else is loaded with safety on, you do that. But of course, you watch your muzzle direction and keep the gun under control at all times. And if they run unloaded, maybe just do the same thing, because then everyone knows the condition of the rifles when they're, you know, passing them in between or whatever they're doing, right?
Yeah.
Mag limits. Magazine limits. Yeah. I mean, the course is... So yeah, magazine limit unlimited unless it's a center fire semi-automatic rifle, and then it's 5 rounds, right?
Or a pistol, and it's 10 rounds.
We don't do pistol in the PAL course. That's RPAL.
No, yeah.
Yeah, you would learn about that in the RPAL, the 10 round. Yeah. You wouldn't learn about, unless the instructor made a point of it, you wouldn't learn about the fact that you can use legally the pistol mags in the rifle, and they adhere to the pistol limits.
Yeah, they don't get into the nuts and bolts on what the mag laws actually are, just the general rhetoric.
Yeah. Which I think is good enough. Like there's too many ifs and ands and buts about like the firearms law in Canada that, if you try to do like a basic course, you want people to get the 90% correct, not 99 or 100 correct. In terms of like the rule of thumb, right? Rule of thumb is, yeah, 5 round mag for a center fire semi-automatic rifle in Canada. That is the rule. It just so happens that you can fit pistol mags in some of them, or you can fit bolt action mags in some of them, or pump action mags in some of them. And that lets you, the law is for the magazine, not for the gun. So if the magazine is a 10 round pistol mag and it so happens to fit in rifle, that doesn't matter. It's still a pistol mag. It's still, that's what it was designed for.
Yeah,
makes it easy for the and the reason why that is a perfectly logical one. It makes it easy for the cops to look at a bag of mags and see what's legal or not. Oh, look, I see a 10 rounder here. Oh, it says pistol on it. That's okay. I see a rifle one, but it's for a bolt action, and it says it's for, or let's say a shotgun magazine. It says AS-46 pump action on it, but it's a 10 rounder. Well, that's okay. It's a magazine for a pump action shotgun. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what you use it in. Doesn't matter what guns you're bringing with you. It matters what the magazine's designed for. And that makes it easy for cops to enforce. And yeah, every once in a while, ooh, there's a magazine. This person put 13 rounds of 9mm in a 40 cal mag. Who cares? Who cares about that? Yeah. It's 13 versus 10. Who cares? Oh, yeah. This person using a 10 rounder instead of a 5. Who cares? It's, it's close enough and it's easy to enforce.
Yeah.
Whatever we get for a mag law afterwards is going to be interesting, because it's going to make this harder to, predict the way that they're going to do it is going to make it much harder to enforce.
Oh, I believe so. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the way it is right now, it looks a bit screwy, but it should, like, aside from the Beowulf thing and some of the other gray area there that, the police have gone out on a limb with their interpretations, the rest of it makes sense. The rest of it, like, is it's a logical choice on what kind of mag limits to use. Kyle, so you go to the range. You're going to use a gun. You check if it's empty first. Do you check the bore?
Check the chamber.
But, check the chamber,
But I can't say I actually look down the barrel and check the bore, unless I'm doing a bore sight.
I think if you're at the range and you did one of these, and they did one of these, some people will be looking at you straight.
You'd have some excited people, yes.
Yeah. So to obviate that, you bring your bore rod, right? Right?
Yeah.
You bring one of these to the range?
No.
And then you stick it down there. Make sure it goes out the other side, right? That's what you do?
No.
No. So
it's not a bad practice, but in reality, it doesn't happen.
Is it a good practice? I don't know if it is or not. I think, like, if you actually did that often, this thing is going to get dirty, and you're going to start putting corruption down into your barrel.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, if you shoot enough, it went bang last time, you put it away, you bring it out, it was bang again.
Yeah.
If you just loaned it to a friend and it came back, you might want to do a good inspection of it when it leaves. But if it's your possession, you'll clean it,
Yeah. And you'll find out in the cleaning with a chamber brush whether there's something down the barrel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
if I loaned someone a shotgun or something like that and they went duck hunting with it, I might clean the barrel afterwards, especially if it's like rainy and muddy and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who knows what they, you know, what they stuffed in there.
Yeah.
I would find it then. I don't really loan out a lot of guns though. So like they're under my control pretty much all the time. I don't have to worry about crap getting in the bores.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't do that.
No.
I actually very rarely look down the bore. I look down the bore of my shotgun that I've had for like 7 years. I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. There is so much leading in there. I should probably clean this thing.
And plastic. That's
oh, yeah. Well, the thing that was really shocking with that thing was the amount of lead that I scraped out of it. But yeah, you wouldn't find that with a bore rod anyways. You just, it's clear. It's not obstructed. Yeah. It was only until I looked down the thing. It was like, oh, she was ugly.
Yeah.
She was ugly. Yeah. And then how do you clean your guns? Like, so the course, you know, was designed, I think the current one was designed in like 2014 or something like that. So they're saying use a user manual to clean the gun. But I think in today's day and age, there's something that's better.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube.
YouTube University.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone out there will show you in video form how to do it. Might even be the manufacturer. You might even be able to find a manufacturer video on how to disassemble and clean your rifle. That would be the best. Like random schmucks like me, I'll show you how to disassemble and reassemble a gun. I may not show you the perfect places to lubricate a gun. And I think a manufacturer will do a better job of that because I don't know. You know, if I've got a gun and I've fired like 1,000 rounds out of it, it has barely been broken in. I don't know that. You just need to lube the cam pin, or you just need to lube the cam pin and this back part here. There's certain firearms where the knowledge around them is going to be such that random people are going to have good practices. AR-15s, for example. You can watch an AR-15 video and trust that the top ranking one probably has a really good detailed disassembly video, and they probably know where to lubricate that thing appropriately. Yeah. But for a bolt action rifle, you're just doing it for preservation. You're not really
it's when it comes down to it, it's real simple. Tear it down. Like, just do a quick field strip. You don't need to tear it down to every nut and bolt every single time. Mm-hmm. And all your contact points. And after you shoot for a while, you're going to see where those are.
Mm-hmm.
All your contact points. If there's a pin and something pivots on it, okay, well, that's a contact point. Oil clean it up in there. You know,
oil or grease,
lube up your gas rings on your bolt for your AR style bolt. Even on your bolt actions, like, you know, you work that there's contact point in there. So you want to lube that up, maybe pull the back of that bolt apart every once in a while, but that's an every once in a while thing. And depends on how much you use it, but just a basic field strip and lube all the contact points, clean the barrel and lube the contact points. That's as easy as it gets.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, like you're saying there, it doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to overthink it. You can just pull it apart and look for the shiny surfaces. Those are probably the ones that that need the lubrication the most, and give them a little bit of light oil. Doesn't even need to be fancy. I think like a lot of the gun community gets hoity-toity about the gun oils, and they kind of all just do the same thing. It kind of doesn't really matter which one you use.
Until you get to the extreme temperatures, it doesn't really matter. I mean, yes, some's going to collect dust a little bit more than the other. But, I mean, if you're,
I think that, you get the gun apart, you look at what's shiny, you give that stuff some oil, and you're 90% the way there. And 90% is good enough. The gun will function after you do that.
Yeah.
Unless there's something else wrong with it, but I digress. So anyways, YouTube University, the nice thing about YouTube is that you get to see visually how they do it and how difficult some of the stuff is. Cause some people might be reticent to like, oh, I'm pushing too hard on this thing. Nah, you're not like ram it. It's fine. I think of removing the floor plate on like a Glock magazine. Hmm. It's a bastard. And if you just followed the manual, like, I'm going to break this thing. This is not right. This is like what I'm seeing right now is not right. No, it is. It's just a real pain in the ass to do.
Yeah.
you watch a video and you'll be like, oh my God, that guy's struggling. Okay, I could put some more power into this thing and get it off, right?
Or you see them bring the hammer out and it's like, oh.
Oh, that's how much force I need to put. Yeah. Or but how much you got to put on.
With that, pay close attention to details, because on some guns, there are things called taper pins that, oh, he's just hammering on that pin. I will, but you didn't pay attention to what side that he's hammering on. Mm-hmm. You're going to mess everything up. So yeah, details matter. If he's hammering it from the left side, until you get that apart and know for yourself, just hammer it from the left side.
Sometimes on the videos, they'll say.
Yeah, sometimes they will.
Yeah. I'm hitting it from this side. Make sure you don't hit it from the other side. But in order for you to say that, you probably have done it wrong once. And some people just haven't done it wrong enough. Like maybe they just always hit it from the left side just out of habit, but not out of knowledge. And they're not able to pass that knowledge on to you because they just haven't run into that problem before.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do about gun? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Mike saying stop the bleed also needs to be more available. If you're going to put holes in things, you should know how to plug them. And yeah, that's actually a really good thing that would be awesome in the PAL course. Like I can't remember what's in there. Is there really much on first aid or tourniquet use in? No. No,
there's nothing on that.
Yeah.
There can't be a safety course.
Well, thing is, there can be, like, they do it all the time in courses.
You can't add 3 hours more training to an 8 hour course.
No, but you can just share some, they do it in the hunters course. They do cover some basic, first aid stuff. Like, yeah, you're not first aid certified after it, but more like emergency, you're out in the middle of nowhere. Here's a couple things that might save your life and then encourage you to go take an actual course.
Yeah. I encourage people in my class to take a course. Yeah. I watch them to, I encourage them to do the, stop the bleed. That was at the start of the day. Hey, if you want to do this, you know, you just need to know that stop the bleed is something and, it's out there and you check it out.
Yeah. I wish it was more prevalent. Cause I know even when I was living in Alberta, it was hard to find a course for that.
It still is. Yeah. I'm fortunate enough to know some instructors and know when they're doing theirs. So it's quite easy for me to get into seeing those, but, it is kind of hard for, everyone else to get one of those just because, yeah, it can be tough. If you volunteer with your range, I would suggest that you recommend to them that you get a trainer in to do that for you guys, because it's a very easy way to get all the people. Like, if you can get all your ROs, or at least a bunch of your ROs to get that kind of certification, you've covered your ROs, your core people that go to your three-gun matches or your shooting matches. They're going to be there a lot. And if you can get them certified, it puts a bunch of certified people on the range for less effort, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah.
That's a good thing to mention. What about gunsmithing and diagnosing issues?
Well, I'm pretty sure the course doesn't cover it. They will cover their ass and say, go see a gunsmith. I think as a firearms...
They cover misfire, hangfire, and squib.
Oh, yes. So the sit and wait for and 5 minutes and...
Basically. 60 seconds. Wait 60 seconds. If you get a click or
that
or
happens in competition all the time.
Waiting the 60. Oh, I got a click. Wait. Oh, I was empty the whole time. Oh, I parted.
Or your
out.
Training.
Oh,
yeah. Your tap rack after you've waited for a minute. Yeah. I think it's actually very, very important. I think as a gun owner, the same thing as your vehicle, you should be able to do basic maintenance and troubleshooting on it. You know? You go to your car and it goes click, 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 click. 90% of the drivers out there will say, oh, I have a dead battery. I need a boost.
You're being way too generous to
the
I think maybe 40% might know that.
In Edmonton, coming from like Grand Prairie, like more redneck places.
Grand Prairie, they'll all know. Yeah. They'll all know, everyone. Even the a grandma, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
In Grand Prairie. In Edmonton, no, maybe half.
Okay, fair. But either way, you should know that when your car goes click, 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 that, oh, my battery is dead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you should be able to do basic repair and troubleshooting on your firearm, same thing as your vehicle.
At least be able to clear a jam at the range.
Yeah.
You get a jam and yeah, you should be able to do something about it. So, yeah. So how would you teach someone to do that?
Well, or for one, start of it is when you're taking it apart, you'd pay attention to the parts and see how they work. There are illustrations out there that will do a cutaway and show you how that firearm functions. And then
I think disassembling it, like you mentioned there, great idea, because I can think of like the guns I've assembled from the bottom up, like AR-15s, the muzzle loader. I know those mechanisms really well because I assembled them. I saw their guts as I put them together. So I know them very, very well. And I think that's something, yeah, a new gun owner could try those things out. Following the YouTube video on how to disassemble and reassemble, I think is a great idea. It gives you more familiarity with it. You're like, oh, if I have the safety on, I can't run the slide. Is that normal? And you can watch the video. I'm like, I guess, okay, it is. Yeah, I can't have the safety on and run the slide. So you can kind of learn some of those different things about your gun.
There's certain things that you can do with that. And yeah, watch the stuff. Even like as far as like, well, we're calling it basic gunsmithing. Everybody should be able to mount a scope. Really, like everyone should be able to mount and bore sight their firearm. In my opinion.
I would agree. The only thing that I'm thinking about is that they should know how to do it properly and watch a video on it, because there's a little bit more to it than you think there is. People like me made lots of mistakes early on back in the day, putting scopes on and cranking the F out of those stupid Allen keys and having issues with the scope not tracking properly because I put on the rings too tight, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, just that's a realize that if there's a screw, chances are there's a torque spec to it. Like it's not, especially something like that. Like it's not just crank it till it's tight. There is a torque spec to it. And sometimes you have to go to the manufacturer for torque spec. Sometimes it's the mounts that you got to go to torque spec. And that's actually one thing that I find frustrating is trying to find the torque specs for optics. That's probably about the most frustrating thing in my opinion for mounting scopes.
The rings, like torquing the rings to the correct spec. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then in finding the spec for that, because, you know, is it like a 2-screw? Is it 4-screw, 6-screw? What manufacturer is it? And they'll all have different torque specs for it. But yeah, no, that's you're right. There's a little bit more to it than that. But I mean, yeah, okay. There's your torque spec, your eye relief, and then leveling your optic.
The leveling the optic is one that seems easy, but you get wrong all the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Read the manual when you get a gun. Follow manufacturer's instructions on break-in. I don't. I just shoot it. I don't do the barrel break-in. I just hammer away. I don't even oil the guns a lot of the times when I get them like fresh out of the box. I just take them straight to the range. I did that with those Winchester Wildcats that I got for Palcourse guns. I brought them to the range and just shot them. The GSG, haven't oiled it yet. That's factory preservation oil on there. And it's working all right. Maybe that's a luck thing.
No. If I was buying a precision firearm, yeah, I'd definitely be paying attention to barrel break-in and whatnot. I gotta say, like, I've been guilty with not doing barrel break-ins, whether it's been my hunting rifles or competition guns. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just burner 223 ammo, so Would it work better? Yeah, it might work better, but I mean, I know my barrel's pretty accurate as is, but yeah, definitely, like, if I was spending money on a high precision firearm, yeah, good idea to check out the break-in procedure.
I guess. I don't have a lot of precision firearms, so it's
me
not
neither.
Something I run into a lot. What if you have a problem you can't figure out? How do you tell your friends or ask for help? Where do you ask for help?
I go look on YouTube or just Google search. You've said something at the beginning before we started the show that just it made me laugh because it's just cringe. Well, not cringe. It's just you're going to have every opinion out there, and some of them are going to be pretty wild. Because I know you go to Reddit all the time for your stuff.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I think, so let's replace that with, like, go to the community. If you were to go to the community on a problem, how do you ensure that they have what they need to diagnose your issue?
Well,
and I think of the worst examples are when people put a text-only post on Facebook, or people text me all the time about guns or comment on my videos. I'll show you one right now that it's like, I can't help this person because it's not descriptive, or I can't figure it out based on kind of what they said.
Yeah, like a text description, like you could do it off of that, but the amount of detail, and you'd have to have your terminology bang on what is happening at what point and everything. And yeah, a lot of people, myself included, I don't know if I'd be able to have the ambition to write something out like that. So, you know, pictures and video.
Yeah. Or, you know, a little bit more about what you're looking for here. Share my screen. That one. So like Narinko MP34, this guy's saying my firing pin sector has issues. Can you help? I was like, no.
Buy a new firing pin.
Oh, but what's a firing pin sector? What is that?
I have no idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is unlikely to get a resolution for this guy. I think if you want to solve a problem on whatever problem he has, he needs either photos, like really nice detailed photos of the exact problem area, or even better, a video. If you can show me a video of the problem, that's going to make it way easier to see what's going on and you can talk over it. Tony posted a video showing like that problem with the slide release, right? With the slide release. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Slide release on the 1911 and what it was doing. And it was easy to see. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that will happen if you do that. That's not a problem with the gun. It's just a problem with like how you're using it. With other guns, like I was mentioning there with the SIG P226, if I have my normal grip on it, I press down on the slide release and it's a natural place to put your finger. And the slide never locks open for me on a 226 unless I change my grip. So I had to change how I shot it because of that.
Glocks were the same for me. You know, you put the, especially with the extended slide release, I'd hardly go to slide locks. Like, what's going on? Oh, riding the slide release.
Yeah, exactly.
Sporting Rifles got a good one here. I'd like to hear about all the fun things you can do with guns, dozens of shooting sports, and where to find out more. None of it when I got my course. And yeah, the courses they tell you about basic range etiquette and that, but that's where it stops.
Yeah. Where to do the competitions. What's normal? Is it normal to get a membership to a gun range, or not normal? Do I just go shoot on people's farms and that kind of thing? I think like normalizing the range, like, yes, you should join a range. I think that's a great idea. And it's something that I push, especially because I'm doing it at a range. So it's something I'm pushing like when I do my course, because I think, people should belong to a range. It's just easier. If I want to shoot my hunting rifle and get it sighted in, it is easier for me to go to a range where they have a bench and they have a target board at 100, and I can go staple up my targets and I can shoot and at the bench and it's accurate and all that kind of stuff. That's all way easier to do at a range than it is on my own. And then, yeah, I do talk about competition shooting and that kind of thing. As my analogy is, like, it's like golf with guns. Like, you're competing against yourself. You're doing it for time, just like golf. You're doing it for strokes. You want to do it in, you know, shortest time possible. And it's a lot of fun, and you get to learn a lot. And I think that, pushing that kind of stuff is fantastic, because it gets people further and lets them enjoy their firearms more. It's kind of
It gives them something to do with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great idea. Great idea. Watch the CCFR Canada Downrange series. Yeah, I think that's another good one for showcasing the other stuff around the shooting community. Cool. All right. Yeah. I think we got this topic, you know, nailed.
Yeah.
Perfect. 100% as always. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had good instructors, so.
All right, let's move on to listener feedback. Mike saying, yeah, gives them community too when you're competing. Yeah, I was actually mentioning this on Saturday to someone. I was saying that, the shooting community is fantastic for a couple of different reasons. Good community of people who have a common hobby. Everyone's background checked. Yeah. So your likelihood of running into scumbags is lower because everyone gets a background check. There are no criminals in the shooting sports. They can't be, because as soon as you get arrested for the wrong crime, you're out. Your guns are gone, right? So the shooting community in general is it's got that filter against it, that selection bias. So they're more likely than not to be pretty solid people. If you forgot a handgun at the range, it's not going to get stolen.
Chances are not, no.
no, that is like that's and I think that's I watched a YouTube video of someone where he put his like cell phone and laptop on his SUV in Abu Dhabi or Dubai, sorry, and he's like, that won't get stolen, and it didn't. It's just like a high trust environment. I think the shooting community is a high trust environment. You got a bunch of people with pals who get background checks and who are generally upstanding citizens.
Yeah. Well, and like, I mean, the Saudi Arabia, like they at the very least lose a hand for getting caught stealing something. If not,
yeah, different
the punishment is pretty stiff. So
you can only steal twice before you run out of hands. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on to emails. Did you want to take this first one? This one from Tony here?
Sure. Good evening, Slamfire Radio. As promised, I am bringing my cost analysis. My progressive pistol reloading setup. I'm reading it word for word. What's here? Yeah. In episode 532, I showcased the new to me Lee Loadmaster on air and started my journey of rebuilding it. The final cost of the complete setup to load 9mm is around $400, which is similar to the cost of a new 2023 Lee Pro 1000 kit. The few benefits of the Loadmaster in comparison are, I can seat bullets and crimp the case on two separate steps, and the press can accept cartridge lengths up to 30-06. Despite the reputation, I have, knock on wood workbench surface, yet to encounter a primer detonation. I would highly recommend
the updated...
No? I've never had one.
Not with any of my reloading, no.
I would highly recommend the updated primer feeding trough, which completely eliminated the primer orientation issue for me, sideways primers, and the explosion shield for peace of mind. It's less than $10. Aside from my research, the 2023 model of Lee Pro 1000 would be a great entry-level progressive press with many improvements that sets it apart from the older models. You may want to take a look at it if you are thinking about loading for pistol. My current load of 9mm range ammo is around 26 cents per shot, which saves about $100 per 1,000 rounds. My estimated ROI would be within 1 year, which is more than reasonable considering I am getting more into action shooting. A word of warning. I would only suggest reloading to people who has the interest in reloading, as it can be time-consuming, labor-intensive, and potentially dangerous if not respected. On another note, I managed to be hated more by Diversity Dave of Foothills Firearms Training as I broke his Noriko 1911 by dry fire practice alone. I've posted a video clip on the SFR Discord. With my bare finger strength, I was able to push out the slide release lever from the right side of the pistol while operating the slide. I rest my finger on the nub end of the slide release lever to positively index outside of the trigger guard, but I guess you are not supposed to do that, at least on some 1911s. I would like to survey all listeners with 1911s and see if all 1911s have that issue or not. For more Tony shenanigans, join the Slamfire Radio Discord, or for some reason, if you want to talk to me in person, I will be at the Calgary Easter Gun Show during the Easter long weekend. See you there. Best regards, Tony. So my first comment is, you're muted.
I sure am, yeah. my slide release moves with just like light finger pressure as well. If it's unlocked, it moves straight out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And my first comment is $400 for a progressive loading setup. That's dirt cheap. Like,
yeah. Is that retail? That's a Lee Loadmaster.
Well,
right?
He said it's similar to the cost of the new Lee Pro 1000.
Oh,
kit.
He says new to me. He bought it used.
Yeah. He bought it used and rebuilt it. But then he says the $400 was just similar to the cost of the new Lee Pro 1000 kit. So still, like, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know how I feel about that because, you know, to me, that seems cheap and I'd be just nervous just because of how cheap it is.
So the Pro 1000, I had a Pro 1000. The priming system, this is an older one. The priming system on it was unusable. If you got a little bit of powder in it, it would misfeed, and then you get more powder in the feedings and it would just like compound. But the rest of it was fine. The powder actuator was fine. The rotating disc thing was fine. Everything else was okay. Just the priming system on it was unusable. If the new one fixes that, it may be fine, even at a low price.
Okay.
Maybe. I'm trying to find what these things go for these days, but I don't see anything on Town Post. I'm going to go on Post. Just to see what like a used Loadmaster would go for. Because I know new, I think they've increased their pricing.
Right.
Loadmaster. Nope. I don't find anything on Gunpost either. I wonder if Gun Nuts has something. I'm just curious to see what they're going for used.
I'm curious. Like, I've never even looked at the Lee. I don't think I've ever looked at anything Lee other than single stage. So... like how that progressive works, like compared to a Dillon or something. Cause I know like the Dillon makes loading super easy,
but it's 2 to 3 times expensive.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
The Pro 1000's not super robust. It's not like a really beefy, I believe the Loadmaster is quite a bit more beefy than it though.
Okay.
I wish I could find, so I can't find any used Loadmaster. Lee Canada. What are these things going for? Budget Shooter Supply has one set up for 223. No, they don't. It goes nowhere. What about 10 to Canada? There's a 9mm one. Page not found. Fantastic. Okay. Is this just like a problem with Google? Like, why does everyone have broken pages? Oh, Western Metal has one. $500. $520 okay. Bucks for a Lee Loadmaster in 9mm or 45 ACP. Amazon's got them. What? No, it doesn't. Page on it. Thanks Amazon, really happy you showed me that product I can't buy. Tony's saying the Loadmaster is now being replaced by the six pack. What is the six pack?
This, I'm guessing it's a six station progressive.
I'm looking here on Tenda. They got the Lee Pro 1000 for $430 in 38 Auto, 44 Magnum, or 45 Colt, 380, 223 Remington. Yeah, $430, $440, somewhere around there. Lee Pro 1000 Loadmaster. Oh, that's a bullet feeder kit. Wow, that's low price, $60 for a bullet feeder kit. I think you got to like top load it. Lee 4 Special. Oh no, that's 44 Magnum. Pro 1000, breech lock, Pro 1000. Completely off topic. I sold a whole bunch of those. Like the holders, a gun guy I know has the Lee 3-hole and 4-hole turrets, and he bought a whole bunch of the wall hangers for those things so you can put them all on the wall. Great way of organizing your dies rather than having to screw them in and out and recheck for zero and that kind of thing. He just has them all on the shell plates, or not the shell plate, the die holder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just a crap load of them. Yeah. I can't find the price, so I don't think I don't think I can solve this this quest that I'm on. Production
as far pod, as
50 BMG classic turret. No, I don't see any. Looks like they're not selling them right now.
No.
No. Well, nope. They got the Challenger breech lock Challenger for $270. I think I'd get the classic cast for that price though. If you're gonna get a kit. Because they sell the classic cast as a kit, $460. I guess that's quite a bit more. Yeah, that's quite a bit more than that breech lock. And if you're just gonna do like rifle or something like that, single stage is fine.
Yeah.
Anywho, I'm ranting and raving too much about this stuff.
It's okay. I wanted to touch on the 1911 and his discovery. I'm curious. We'll say. I'm curious as to what situation he's got his finger up on his takedown pin or his slide lock during recoil. Like where that slide moving, you're going to be having that pressure on there. Like it happens.
I don't think during recoil. I think during he's saying clearing a malfunction or like putting a mag in or something like that, operating it without firing it.
Okay.
If you were gripping it hard and you had that finger high up and you were pressing really hard to keep it up there, I don't know that I press my finger really hard when I keep it up there and out of the way though. It's lightly resting there, and that's enough for me.
I end up here, even if I've had it down here. When I grip, I guess I'm there, but.
But you're not pressing really hard.
I'm always straight fingered. I think it's bad practice to have hitting that with your fingertip. I think that's personally, I think that's bad practice.
Oh, because, I put my finger up there. I put my finger up there too. I just grab my handgun and.
But if you just have your fingertip there, it's too easy to slip in and hit your trigger.
I suppose, yeah. As I grabbed the gun off the wall, I did the same thing. So that must be how I do it. I didn't really think about it. I know my finger's up there somewhere. I didn't think about where it was. That's where it is on my shadow.
Yeah.
It's just kind of up there like that. Because any lower, and it's impossible to tell, like, is his finger on the trigger right now or not? You can't see if you're just, if I'm just moving the gun around like this. So it has to be up nice and high for you to see that it's out of the way.
So, I'm just wondering.
Maybe recommend putting your finger higher then?
Or
then he won't touch it.
I'd have to watch that video again because did he have like a bent finger where he was touching it with the tip of his finger?
It was straight?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe just index that finger a little bit higher. You're not going to be firing, so you don't need to worry about the fact that it's in the port there.
Yeah. So then you're
nice and high.
Yeah.
And then pop it down when it's ready.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
That happens though. Grip, you got to mess around with your grip because your hand's got to fit the gun. And hopefully you'd be able to do it the other way, but not with borrowed guns. With borrowed guns, you got to make your grip fit the gun and not, you don't have the privilege of going into the gun shop and being like, oh, I don't like how that one fits my hand. I'm going to get a different one.
Also, you shouldn't be putting any pressure up there with your trigger finger. Like you got your grip on your gun. Like you shouldn't be having much pressure on the side of the gun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It should be in your three fingers. Cause that's what you're going to be firing like that. And all the pressure's down there and here and not up on the trigger. Right.
Yeah.
Ooh, you're a dirty girl. I got to clean the shadow. Or not. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Just pour more oil in it.
It only starts jamming when it's really, really dirty. Like I got to get mud in there or something like that in order for this thing to start jamming. It doesn't jam. But yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to take a look at some little screws and that kind of thing. Anyways, I'm way off topic here. YouTube comments. You want to take those?
Sure. These are all from episode 548, last week's show. First one is from Eugenate, saying no audio. Tony replied saying he thinks it's just Google processing, that he could hear the audio. And we got a few from Tony. Tony is saying that your shirt last week says thunder. And then plus one for co-witness irons. And not sure if Vortex pistol dots would gain popularity with the new Defender ST. At least the features are modern now. Well, Vortex, they're out there because Vortex threw a pile of them on the prize table at Superstition.
Yeah.
The new Defenders.
That's one thing I liked about Vortex.
Yeah. Oh, they support the
sponsor stuff.
Oh, they support the shooting sports. Like, no one else. Like, they are huge supporters of the shooting sports. We got a couple comments from Eddie. And he says, Adriel put on a wife beater shirt to impress Kelly.
I tried. That was the shirt I was looking for before we started the show the week before. And I couldn't find it. And okay. I finally put it on and Kelly wasn't on.
Yeah. And then Eddie says,
observed.
Yeah. Eddie says, Kyle, don't feel bad about not having an AK because you already have something better, an AR. And that is true. That is very true. And Tony fired back saying, Eddie, sir, you need to understand freedom, which means AK in one hand, AR in the other, and two world wars on the hip. And no, I would not be trusting myself to a 1911. I don't care about two world wars.
What about my stopping power? No?
No.
Oh. Yeah, I think I'd rather have a 9mm too. Yeah. And something not so heavy. I can't believe I was watching Ben Stoger's review on the, what's the 2011 that that some cops are using? It's crazy.
There's some staccato. Well, cops here, there's some
staccato. Yeah, one of those. Yeah, yeah, no. Staccato. There are some police departments using the staccato. And I was like, what? That is some bullshit. No, that's not true. Yeah. No, it is.
There's cops here running staccatos.
That's insane. That is, like, I appreciate a good handgun, but at the same time, if I was a cop and I had to have that big, heavy piece of shit on my hip, I would have a Glock. I would have a Glock 17.
No.
Because, like, oh, yes, I would. I would not have a big, steel gun.
I would not have a Glock on my hip, but, I mean, really, when you look at the rest of their gear, that pistol weight's nothing.
It's just another, it's more pounds. Yeah. You know what you're gonna have to do? Run. You're gonna have to run after perps a lot. You want a 3-pound gun or you want a 1-pound or a pound and a half or whatever you
at
want.
That point with everything else I'm carrying, that extra 2 pounds is not gonna make the difference.
I disagree, but I'm not a cop either, so I don't this is purely theoretical.
Exactly.
Carrying concealed, I still wouldn't carry the fucking staccato. I'd carry a polymer gun, something that's nice and light and doesn't like weigh on my stupid belt and my hip all damn day to never fire it once in my career. I would want something light that's still going to work, still going to be reliable, doesn't have any controls on it that I can mess up, and I can just pull it and start blasting.
Yeah. Okay.
But not for competition. For competition, I use the big, heavy piece of shit because
it's a little bit of recoil. And I want to make mine heavier because eventually I want to get the stainless steel grip.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that is it for our YouTube comments. We're starting to trail off again.
Well, speaking of cops for guns, I saw on the competition shooting subreddit, someone had posted IDPA results for cops, general cops, SWAT, and then general IDPA audience. General IDPA shooters are better than SWAT. Much better.
Yeah, well, they're used to the fishing vests, so.
Used to fishing vests. And they're better shooters.
Yeah.
yeah. Cops are worse shooters by far.
As a general rule, yes.
Yes, yeah. But even SWAT, you would think with SWAT, like, oh no, those guys are like, they're enthusiasts. They're going to.
There are some teams guys that are pretty good, but yeah, still some. Yeah.
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 Yeah. In general, the SWAT shooters were worse than your 50, 60 year old, 70 year old IDPA enjoyers.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. But that said, I think, there's still a lot of really good, some SWAT snipers. I bet you some of those guys are hot shit. Like some of the long range guys. Some of those guys are going to be really good.
And locally, actually, like locally, there's a lot, like Roswell. There were, I think, like something like 20 some people there. And three people weren't law enforcement or some realm like that. So like that the amount of law enforcement that gets into competition shooting around here is really good. The majority of your shooters are law enforcement, but that's still such a small fraction of what the force is.
Well, we used to have more military shooters running three gun at Chaz, but we have fewer now and very few cops. The cops that did shoot were good shooters. They were enthusiasts. They were into it. And they were competing with everyone else. And I think at Grand Prairie, same thing. Cops that do shoot there are pretty good. I only know the two. And they're both okay.
Oh, for Peace River, yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, again, way off topic. you comment on their stuff on Instagram and Facebook and Discord and all that kind of stuff. Discord, we've got like the little chat on the side there, which someone's talking over there. Tony saying free shipping on orders of $250 or more when you enter the coupon code free ship for SFRC.
There it is.
In the pudding. And funny story, Kelly will respond if you tag her because she hates seeing the notification on her phone. So all you need to do to get her to summon her is just tag her in there and she will reply. If you want to buy something from Cabela's or Brownells, first go to the slamfireradio.com website, then click over to do the thing and then buy the thing for the same price. And we'll get a little kickback. They'll throw a couple of coins at us just as their way of saying thanks. And then we'll read it once a month, whatever people bought that we can see in there. Thanks to our supporters on Patreon and Player. If you'd like to support us, head on over to one of those things. If you'd like to email the show, send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. We read all the emails that you send in.
Yep.
Unless they're, I don't know, offensive or something, but we haven't had one of those. Shout outs, recommendations, podcasts, YouTube, that kind of thing.
I'll shout out the Roswell crew for a fun match on Saturday.
Very good. I'll shout out Damien, my co-instructor for the PAL course. By having two kits and two instructors, our practical testing at the end of the day was super fast. And that was very nice. Yeah, very nice to be able to do that. And then for recommendation, go watch that video on IDPA cops versus regular IDPA competitors, because the cops, I think the cops would be faster. They'd be in better shape, right? You get a lot of people think of like the donut cop, but the average IDPA competitor is not going to be in super great shape either.
No.
But they're probably like leagues ahead at shooting accurately and quickly compared to your average police officer or military.
Yeah.
Anywho, I'll stop talking about that. finally, join our Discord server. We post little pictures of what we're up to during the week over there. You can see whatever weird 3D printing stuff I'm doing at the time. Watch us on Facebook. This video will be up on YouTube shortly tonight. And Player, join the CCFR, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.